Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're immersing ourselves in a really fascinating book. It's called Epic Measures, Global Health Through Data by Jeremy N. Smith.
Yeah, and you hear global health and data, and you might think, okay, a bit dry. But honestly, this book reads more like a thriller sometimes. It's about intellectual clashes, big institutions.
Totally. Our mission today is really to unpack how this, well, seemingly boring world of statistics didn't just tweak global health policy. It completely turned it on its head.
Right. Because for like decades, the people making huge decisions about health funding, disease priorities, they were basically operating with a completely wrong map.
Flying blind, you could say. Mm-hmm. Especially in developing countries, the data just wasn't there, or it was, you know, unreliable, sometimes even politically skewed. It was a massive problem.
Exactly. Imagine trying to spend billions of dollars effectively, but your information is just fundamentally flawed. You might be tackling yesterday's problems, or worse, completely missing these huge silent burdens of disease and disability.
So this book, Epic Measures, it tells the story of how scientists essentially built a GPS for global health. A system to pinpoint the real sources of human suffering and death.
Which finally allowed resources, you know, money and effort, to actually go where they could save the most lives or, just as importantly, improve the quality of life for the most people.
And the person who brings this whole complex story to life so well is the author Jeremy N. Smith.
Yeah, and what's interesting about him is that he's not a doctor, he's not an epidemiologist working inside the system, he's a journalist, an investigative author.
Which gives him this really valuable outsider's perspective, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. He's known for taking these really complex scientific topics and making them, well, accessible, even dramatic.
He digs into the science, the models, but he approaches this huge project, the Global Burden of Disease Study, or GBD, without being sort of tied to the institutions he's writing about, like the World Health Organization.
And that's so important here because, as you said, this story is full of intellectual battles, bureaucratic resistance, real turf wars. It wasn't just a quiet academic exercise.
Not at all. Smith can really focus on the human drama, especially around the central figure, Dr. Christopher Murray, this visionary but sometimes controversial scientist and his team. They basically dared to ask, what if we've got it all wrong?
So the book's core idea, its central premise, is that the future of global health really relies on this revolutionary power of accurate measurement. Getting the numbers right.
Championed now by the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, IHME, which Murray founded.
And the big problem they had to tackle first was this historical obsession with just counting deaths, mortality statistics.
Right. It's like only counting the ships that sink, but ignoring all the damage happening on the ships that are still afloat. It missed this huge submerged part of the iceberg.
Which was the incredible burden of diseases and injuries that didn't kill you quickly, but caused years, even decades, of suffering and disability, chronic conditions.
And because those weren't being counted properly, they weren't getting funded properly, resources were misallocated.
So to fix this, Murray and his collaborator, Alan Lopez, introduced this really groundbreaking metric. It's kind of the start of the book, in a way.
Definitely. The Disability Adjusted Life Year, or DALY.
The DALY. Explain that a bit. It sounds technical, but the concept is crucial.
It is. It's basically designed as a common currency for health loss. It combines two key things. First, the years of life lost, or YLL, due to dying prematurely.
Okay, that part seems straightforward enough.
Right. But the revolutionary part is the second component. The years lived with disability, or YLD. This tries to capture the impact of living in a state of less than full health.
Ah, so it's not just about length of life, but quality of life, too.
Exactly. And by combining YLL and YLD into one single daily number, it allows for an apples-to-apples comparison between a vastly different health problems.
Like comparing, say, deaths from malaria to the years of suffering caused by severe depression.
Precisely. Or lower back pain or hearing loss. Things that don't necessarily kill you but can wreck your life for decades. The DALY aimed to make that invisible suffering visible, quantifiable for policymakers.
Okay, let's get into the story of how this actually happened. Smith starts by tracing Dr. Murray's initial doubts way back to his childhood.
Yeah, he grew up partly in Niger, and even as a kid, he saw this huge gulf between the official health statistics his father, who worked in public health, was dealing with.
And the reality of what was actually happening to people on the ground, the DALY life and death he was witnessing.
Right. He saw that the official records were often incomplete or just plain wrong. causes of death were misclassified or maybe just unrecorded.
And you mentioned earlier the data was often messy. Smith talks about things like verbal autopsy.
Yeah, it sounds kind of grim, doesn't it? But in many places, that was the reality. If someone died outside a hospital, maybe a health worker would interview the family afterwards and try to basically guess the cause of death based on symptoms described by grieving relatives.
Wow. So highly subjective and often unreliable.
Absolutely. So Murray knew that to build a better map, they first needed this new unit of measurement, the daily. He and Alan Lopez developed it, but then came maybe the biggest hurdle.
The disability weights.
Exactly. To calculate the YLD part years, lived with disability, they had to assign a numerical weight to the severity of hundreds of different conditions. How disabling is blindness compared to, say, moderate anxiety?
Oof. It sounds incredibly difficult, maybe even ethically tricky. How do you put a number on human suffering like that? Wasn't there pushback?
Oh, huge pushback. It was, and sometimes still is, very controversial. Critics argued it was impossible, or that it reflected cultural biases, or that it devalued the lives of people with disabilities.
Understandable concerns. How did Murray and the team defend it?
Their argument basically was that health organizations were already making these kinds of value judgments implicitly whenever they decided where to put funding. You know, they were choosing which problems mattered more.
Okay, right.
The daily, they argued, just tried to make those judgments explicit, systematic, and transparent, based on panels of experts and public surveys and open to revision. It wasn't perfect, but it was an attempt to be more rational than just relying on intuition or politics.
So they create the daily, they assign these controversial disability weights, and then they publish the first global burden of disease study in 1993. What happened?
Well, the findings were explosive. They completely upended a lot of conventional wisdom in global health.
Because the priorities had always been focused so heavily on infectious diseases, especially in poorer countries, right?
Right. But the daily data revealed a couple of really shocking things. First, mental illness, specifically major depression, showed up as one of the absolute top 10 causes of disability worldwide.
Which nobody was really talking about on a global policy level back then.
Almost invisible. Because like we said, depression doesn't usually kill you directly, so it wasn't showing up in the old mortality-focused stats. But the delays revealed the staggering number of healthy years lost to it.
Okay, that's one shocker. What was the other?
Road traffic accidents, car crashes, motorcycle accidents, pedestrians being hit. The Daily showed this wasn't just a transportation issue. It was a massive, massive public health crisis.
Especially affecting certain groups.
Yeah, particularly young men in low and middle income countries. It demanded a totally different kind of response infrastructure. Policing, public awareness, not just doctors and clinics.
So revealing these kinds of inconvenient truths, I imagine that didn't go over well with everyone?
Not at all. Smith calls this period the institutional wars. There was intense backlash, particularly from established players like the World Health Organization, the WHO.
Why? Were they disputing the methods? Or?
Partly methods, but a lot of it was, well, power and priorities. The GBD data directly challenged the existing narratives, the established funding streams, the authority of certain departments.
If the data suddenly shows that, say, back pain causes more overall health loss in a region than a disease that has a whole well-funded department dedicated to it, that's threatening.
Exactly. It meant budgets were questioned, experts felt undermined. The GBD was seen as this independent, kind of rebellious, truth-telling entity, and Murray himself wasn't known for, let's say, compromising easily.
So it became political. The data itself was maybe less the issue than the implications of the data.
Very much so. The establishment pushed back hard. They couldn't necessarily disprove the core findings, but they could make life difficult, which ultimately led to the next big chapter.
The creation of IHME.
Right. When it became clear the GBD wouldn't find a comfortable home within the existing structures, Murray looked elsewhere. He managed to secure a huge landmark grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Who were famously very focused on data-driven approaches themselves.
Precisely. It was a perfect philosophical match. And with that funding, Murray established the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, IHME, at the University of Washington in Seattle.
And that basically gave the GBD project a permanent, independent home.
Exactly. It institutionalized it. It wasn't just a one-off study anymore. It became this ongoing, constantly updated, global collaboration involving thousands of scientists.
Yeah.
The true GPS for global health became operational and sustainable.
Okay, that's a fascinating story of development and struggle. Let's maybe pull back and think about the bigger themes or messages that come out of Epic Measures.
Well, the most obvious one, I think, is just the fundamental power of measurement. You know that saying, what gets measured gets managed? This book is like the ultimate proof of that on a global scale.
Without good data, even the best intentions can go completely wrong.
Absolutely. And tied into that is the second big theme, redefining what we even mean by health. It shifted the focus from just preventing death to promoting overall well-being and quality of life.
The Daily forces you to acknowledge that years spent suffering from chronic pain or mental illness are a huge loss. Even if the person doesn't die prematurely, it's a loss of human potential.
Right. Which leads straight to the third theme, uncovering these unseen epidemics of disability. Things like musculoskeletal problems, mental health disorders, sensory impairments.
Stuff that just wasn't on the radar for major funding before the GBD data made the burden visible. They were underfunded precisely because they didn't fit the old model of counting deaths.
Yeah. And maybe a final theme or implication is about equity. Good data collection is actually a form of advocacy.
How so?
Because it gives visibility to the problems of marginalized communities, maybe rural populations, or groups whose health issues were previously ignored or just undocumented. Accurate data can force policymakers to pay attention. It promotes a kind of health justice.
That's a powerful point.
Yeah.
The book is also full of memorable lines that really capture this whole philosophy. You pulled a few key ideas.
Yeah, there are some great ones. First, this idea about the purpose of measurement. The goal is not just to count deaths, but to count them in a way that leads to preventing them.
Right, it has to be actionable. It's not just academic bean counting. It's about guiding intervention.
Exactly. Then there's this challenge to complacency. The most dangerous assumption in global health is that we already know where the problems are.
That hits hard. It warns against relying on old habits, anecdotes, or just gut feelings. You have to check against the evidence, even if it's uncomfortable.
And finally, maybe summing up the practical impact. The revolution in health measurement isn't just about better numbers. It's about better choices.
Better choices for governments, for donors, for health organizations, leading to better outcomes for people.
Ultimately, that's the goal. Which brings us to how this applies maybe to us, to you listening. How can we use this GBD mindset?
Well, on a personal level, I think it encourages us to be more rigorous in our own health decisions. Look beyond just the simple advice or the latest headline.
Yeah, seek out the evidence. Think about risks and benefits more systematically. It's not just asking, could this kill me? But also, how might this impact my quality of life over the long term? It's kind of applying a personal daily calculation.
Like considering the potential years of disability from smoking, not just the risk of lung cancer death.
Right. And then on a broader level, for advocacy or policy, this data is incredibly empowering.
Because it's objective evidence.
Exactly. Citizens, local health groups, they can use local GBD data because IHME provides country-specific estimates now to question existing priorities.
So if the data for your region shows, say, a huge burden from diabetes or depression, but most funding still goes to something else based on historical patterns.
You have the evidence to argue for a shift in resources. It helps make those conversations based on facts, not just opinions or tradition. It's a democratizing force in that sense.
Looking back at the whole story, what surprised you the most reading the book?
Honestly, I think it was the sheer intensity of the political resistance. You sort of naively think, oh, better data. Everyone will want that.
Yeah, you'd hope so.
But Smith shows how quickly data becomes political the moment it challenges established power structures or funding streams. The GBD faced rejection not necessarily because it was wrong, but almost because it was too right, too disruptive.
That's quite sobering. For me, I think the biggest takeaway was that profound shift in perspective, realizing how much suffering was simply invisible before the daily.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding that health isn't just the absence of death, it's the presence of well-being, the absence of disability. And that the meticulous, often unglamorous work of counting and measuring can actually be just as heroic in its own way as emergency medicine.
Absolutely. The core message really is that we have to measure our way to better health, continuously, objectively, and for everyone.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.